The subject for our meeting today is the gradations of the supermind. Very often, when these chapters are taken up for discussion, I have always had a gnawing doubt as to what is the utility of discussing or expounding things which are still of academic value to us, because those states of consciousness, those states of being are so much beyond our present attainments that even conceptually it is difficult to relate ourselves to them. So whether these are not idle speculative exercises, as things are done in schools and colleges, where children are told and they write essays and then they are given marks and all that, whether this is not a continuation of the old way, this kind of doubt comes to me off and on. But then I remember what Sri Aurobindo wrote somewhere, that while it is true that this kind of knowledge remains intellectual, an intellectual acquisition, without any necessary impact on the practical life as things stand, still that knowledge is necessary, because our minds must be accustomed to that climate. They must know the course that is charted out, the course that we have to journey upon, and mentally we must be prepared for experiences and the like when they come upon us in our inner quest. When we have an experience, if we have an mental background helping us to appreciate its bearings, then the experience is better received and assimilated. If we are in a total blank, the experience is not likely to yield its full benefit. So from that point of view, something like railway guides and travel books, advance information of what we are going to meet, the situations that are likely to arise and how they are to be met, where we have to change trains, the mind vital for the mental reason for the intuitive, and so on. So it is necessary. So I convinced myself before proceeding with this section of the synthesis of yoga that we should go through all the chapters and discuss in our own way what he describes as the ascent of the mind through the intuitive levels of consciousness to the various grades of the supramental knowledge, will and anand. In other words, this supramental gnosis. We have seen that above our normal reasoning mind are the levels of the spiritual mind which lead us to the intuitive levels. But the intuitive mind also is still a mind. At best it can be a link between the reasoning mind of man and the Gnostic mind. But it is a necessary link. Intuition is a direct presentation of knowledge, may not be in masses, in comprehensive ways, but still there are flashes of intuition, building up a climate of right knowledge, right feeling, and possibilities of right action by their constant action. This working of the intuitive faculties, to which we open more and more in the course of yogic development, translates itself into an ever-present feeling of the presence of a higher spirit or a greater Purusha on the altitudes of our being, with a different degree, different kind and degree of knowledge, consciousness and delight. But there is a radical difference between that state which we feel on the heights of our being or by reflection into our depths and the state of our normal mental faculties. There has to go on a double action: the descent of the higher consciousness with the higher charge into the lower mental formations, and the ascent of the lower mind. From that point of view, the highest that we are is still the lower mind. Ascent of it into the higher degrees of consciousness where the intuitive light is playing. As this double action proceeds, the action of the Divine Spirit on the intuitive level of our being becomes more organized, more natural. But clearly, that is not the end. It is only the middle element. The intuitive working reveals itself as only a middle element, even as the reasoning mind has revealed itself to us as a middleman between the outer world and the higher spiritual knowledge. And once we recognize that the intuitive level is not the terminus, the final resting place, we proceed in our evolution upwards. Intuitive openings occur, giving us revelations of still higher states of knowledge. What you may call the divine reason, not the human reason. The divine reason, still it is a reason in this sense that the activity of the consciousness is idea-wise, thought-wise, form by form. Maybe the mental reason thinks that each form is all, and the divine reason does not. It is aware of the unity behind. Still, reason proceeds by a depiecing, in effect. So even the divine reason functions on the pattern of the mental reason, though with a different background and with a different result. It is what Sri Aurobindo calls the luminous supramental. Not the original supramental, but the luminous action of the supramental. It is a delegated action of the knowledge. On the heights of the intuitive being, leading to the supermind proper, we first meet the action of the divine reason, which is a delegated activity. When we stand at this level, we perceive there are four faculties, four powers through which even the supramentalized intuition acts. From our human point of view, intuition is a flash of truth. But on its own plane, when the intuitive faculties function in their full force and rhythm, we find that there are four powers or four faculties through which the intuitive knowledge gathers and becomes effective. First, there is what may be called the suggestive intuition. We get ideas. The ideas don't form as a result of our reasoning, arguments, but just the ideas sail into our mind with a suggestion that they are the right ideas. So this is what is called the suggestive intuition. Ideas are thrown, these are the right things. But that alone is not enough. If we were to proceed only the moment the ideas come, it may land us anywhere because there are always imitative ideas. So there comes in the second faculty of intuition called the discriminative intuition. Intuitive discrimination, which immediately relates these ideas to the circumstances around, to other mental formations, to other possible intuitive ideas which may or may not have relevance at the moment. So this kind of sifting of the values of the suggested idea helps us to assess the significance and the role of the ideas that are given to us. Third, there is the intuitive inspiration, which helps us to find the right word, the right rhythm, the right process of expression, expressing and manifesting this idea. That too is not enough. There is the fourth faculty, the intuitive revelation, which brings before our mind the full body or the form in which the truth or the idea clothes itself. So all these four powers are necessary before there can be an organized action of the intuition. Suggestive intuition, discriminative intuition, inspirational intuition, illuminative intuition. These are the four powers. They are naturally different from the mental operations of these very same powers, because in the mind they are subject to the shadow of ignorance. But at the intuitive level, they are not, though they are not in their plenary action, which they can be only when we reach the supramental heights. In the suggestive intuition, there is not the labor of acquisition of knowledge. We take books, we take data, we argue, we discuss, in order to arrive at some knowledge, get a content of knowledge. So we have to win at the mental level, acquire. But where it is a suggestive intuition, there is no acquisition, but only a disclosing by intuition of the truth that we can have. In all this action that goes on through the fourfold powers, there has to be a continuous pulling upwards. If the pull upwards is not there, the pull downwards prevails. There can be no stationary movement, stationary functioning on the higher heights of consciousness. Either you have to continuously go on upwards, gathering the whole of the being in the process, or you are subject to the downward gravitational pull of the lower mind. Sri Aurobindo distinguishes between two belts of the gnosis. One is the lower intuitive gnosis, the second higher is the higher intuitive gnosis. Now, the lower intuitive belt of the Gnostic mind is where the faculties of perception and discrimination prevailed. They are more active, the suggestion and the discrimination. That is, they are nearer the mental process. In the higher intuitive gnosis, the powers of inspirational intuition and illuminative intuition are more active, and both these together constitute what we may call the intuitive gnosis. After this operation of the intuitive gnosis is complete, after all the lower mental levels have been assumed in the intuitivized consciousness, the next step of going direct into the supramental consciousness is possible. And the first character of this transition is there is a complete reversal in our way of functioning. Till the supermind is reached, even in the heights of the intuition, as we have seen, there is some kind of projection of the mental processes, mental way of thinking and dealing with things. But here, the whole process is reversed. We do not proceed in the pure gnosis from outward to inward, as we do here. At our mental level, first we see things, the data, the senses gather, the sense mind presents, the intelligent mind interprets, the reasoning mind argues, and ultimately the buddhi, the understanding will sanction. So the whole knowledge proceeds from gross things to the subtler. But here, in the gnosis, the process is the very reverse of what is natural on the physical plane. One does not exert the consciousness to form a knowledge, to get an idea of what is what. But the consciousness directly receives the knowledge and transmits it to the lower members. The thought and will are not built up, not slowly given shape as at our level. The thought, the will are already there. They sail into our consciousness. We have to receive them and transmit them as they are to the other levels for their formulation in terms of the other members. The Purusha, who is here, if he is not involved in the mental operations, in the spiritual mind you can say he is behind, he is a witness. But here in the supramental gnosis or the supramental reason, he rises above. He stands above the processes of knowledge. The second character, the first character is a complete reversal of the processes. And the second character is the luminous will and knowledge from above. They are transferred by intuitive faculties to the other members. But in this transmission, there takes place a good deal of dilution, dispersion, and even a certain amount of deformation. It is for that purpose Sri Aurobindo calls for a yogic preparation for subtilizing our members, like the body, the life, the mind, the emotions, the mind also. They have to be purified, lifted out of their limited movements, so that when higher things are transmitted, they are allowed to work in the system as integrally and in as pure an impact as possible. Till the supramental reason starts functioning, it is the spiritual reason that reigns. After we have gone beyond the borders of the logical mind, touched the spiritual, it is by and large the spiritual reason that rules the movements of our consciousness. And Sri Aurobindo points out that even the spiritual reason is not the last. The supramental reason is a stage still ahead. Even the spiritual reason has the same four powers: suggestion, discrimination, inspiration, and intuition. The way of its functioning is that spiritual reason on this height, on the height of the intuitive gnosis, possesses the truths, discloses the truths, harmonizes all of them, and all the data that is presented by the senses including the sixth sense, the inner mental sense, they are harmonized and presented. It does not mean that the circumstances, forms and movements of the world in which we live, they are excluded, they are taken up, only they are given the right interpretation, the right assessment, and put to the right use. They are not abolished simply because they come from a lower plane of consciousness. They are lifted up, and the plane from which they come is helped to receive more and more of the light of the higher planes. But the spiritual reason is alone not enough. Why? Sri Aurobindo points out that even the spiritual reason acts by a kind of representative idea and will in the spirit. It does not have the truth directly. He uses a simile. He says it is a power of the sun, the light, but not the power of the soul, the self. Surya Shakti and not Atma Shakti. Sun is, after all, a secondary fact. The self is the primary fact. So the spiritual reason can only emanate the power of the sun, the light of the sun, radiation. In the supramental zone, one falls into action in union with the universal and the transcendent spirit. The difference between the spiritual consciousness, spiritual reason, and the supramental consciousness and the supramental reason is simply this, that in the spiritual, one is in touch with the universal and the transcendent spirit, either in the depths or in the center or in the heights of the being, and remains there. But in the supramental or the Gnostic, that unity, that identity spontaneously translates itself into action. Whether you want it or not, just as we breathe, as we act, that consciousness, the universal and the transcendent spirit, it pours itself in action. That there is no such practical distinction between status and dynamism. Both are two wings, not one behind the other. They are almost involved in each other, each supporting the other, each presuming the other. And this action becomes very natural at the Gnostic level. In the spiritual consciousness, in the spiritual reason, we have the idea that all exists in one. The idea is there, the mental knowledge is there, and we don't function outside that knowledge. But in the supramental reason, this knowledge that the self is in all, that the all are in the self, and the all are the self, for the self is the all. Every moment it is dynamic. It governs our slightest thought, slightest feeling, slightest action. It doesn't remain a background knowledge, which we know but may or may not be able to act up to. All is seen and experienced as the luminous body of the divine substance. Thought itself is seen concretely as a luminous formation of the truth, not a reflection, not a distant projection, but the luminous body of the truth. This, having pointed out this difference between the spiritual reason and the supramental reason, Sri Aurobindo goes on to discuss how the spiritual reason insists on being lifted up into the supramental status. And there is that also this fourfold action. Though the fourfold action distributes itself into a threefold action in this sense, that the discriminative action does not need to take place separately. Along with the dawning of the idea, along with the representative action of the thought, the right relation strikes. So discriminative work is not a separate function. And there is a threefold action, that is observed in the process of the conversion of the spiritual reason into the supramental reason. First is the representative action, which concerns the actualities of life, the actualities of facts. For instance, all forms are the one, the many and the multitude are the one. The actualities of the many being one, that knowledge is firmly organized and expressed in the representative action. Second is the interpretative action, which concern the potentialities. If these are the actualities, what do they lead to? Where do they point? Manifestation, yes, but in what ways? What are the right manifestations? So this awakening of the sense of potentialities and working them out belongs to the interpretative action of the supramental reason. And then there is that knowledge by identity. This action of the knowledge by identity governs one's own life and experience. It's not a matter of knowledge, not a matter of comprehension, but a matter of intimate day-to-day life. The identity, knowledge of identity with the consciousness, the being, and the delight of truth, that spontaneously renders itself into our life and experience. In all these, Sri Aurobindo adds a para at the end, saying that though he has discussed these in a kind of a mental order, step by step, in order to let us understand how things are to be done, he says in actual practice, things don't follow this precise mathematical order. Some higher things may come up earlier, stir up things, then the lower things may come in the front. So there is a mixed and intermittent action of the various principles and forces. And as we have said, the higher yoga force or the supramental shakti knows, and he makes a very profound observation. You see, from the lower end, we may not be able to know how the higher works. The lower elements may not be able to put themselves in tune with the higher or understand.
But the higher very well knows what is the position of the lower. It can stoop, it can identify itself with the lower and help it to grow into itself. It is not only possible, but it is natural. The higher can always contain the lower, lift it up and impart its character to that. So the lower has no reason whatever to shy away from the higher.
The difficulty in meditation is that lower
the spiritual reason is the link between the higher end. And the action of the spiritual reason goes on correcting the deficiencies of the lower reason. That stage of spiritual reason is precisely meant to correct and fashion the lower instrument. May mostly difficulties are over. Certain intrinsic difficulties may remain, which are corrected by the plenary action of the light.
And there is the appeal of the bath,
they all undergo, they have to undergo continuous change. The last change can come only with the highest height of the supermind, to which we are still to come. We are still discussing the lower gradations of the supermind. There are levels. Here, so far, we have discussed not the levels of the supermind as they are, but the levels of the supramental action in divinizing our mind. The constitution of the supermind we have not yet discussed. The action of the supermind as it reveals itself.